So, do you want to do,
I mean, I.
Okay, seriously, Carol, what the fuck?
We're like babes in the wild.
Or does in the landscape of the mind.
Yeah. No, that was actually a little poignant. I think that it can be so subversive turning on it.
Oh man. That noise was amazing. She was like a sad cat.
I'm sorry, but I want to be able to see out of my knuckle hair. You opened my eyes.
We are a hive mind. We are one.
Oh, hey, little nepotiz.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a fact.
Say the word. You know the word.
Happy Halloween, everybody! Welcome to a Matter of Taste podcast.
We really should have thought ahead and did, like, an actual, like, full Halloween-themed episode, considering we're a horror podcast.
I know, I kept trying to come up with stuff. I wanted to try and finish, like, a short story and release as, like, a little bonus episode reading it, and then that short story turned into a really angsty family drama and would not have worked for a Halloween episode.
Don't you love it when that happens?
Oh, yeah. but yeah, happy Halloween, everyone.
Indeed, happy Halloween. My favorite holiday. It's number one. It's Shark Week number two, Christmas, so close third.
I think we did discuss, making, like, horror movie recommendations at the end of the show, so stick around for that.
Yeah. Please don't turn off the podcast in the middle of the episode. We'll be funny, I promise. I swear to you. So we are discussing episode 3 of The Walking Dead.
Yes.
Isolation.
Which every happy feeling ever went to die. Basically.
Yeah, every single one of them. Just all of them. All of them.
And I'll tell the listeners, I had to duck out, like, in the middle of the episode because of stomach trouble, and so I missed Carol's conversation with Tyrese where she ended up pushing the water bucket over or whatever. So, and I was going to rewatch it, but AMC.com was not fair. So, yeah, just that little bit. I know what happened, obviously. But if I'm a little vague about the details there, that's why.
Well, how about that?
but yeah, so we got the fallout from last week. Last week we ended with the burnt bodies of Karen, and I think we learned the other guy was named David. At this point we're just like, who the fuck is David?
At the last minute, the screenwriters were like, oh fuck, we forgot to name that guy.
Yeah. Well, there was a great comment.
I know, they did name him. Cause, when, after Karen coughs, she says, oh, David's been coughing too, I'm gonna go get him.
Okay. There was a great comment on Twitter from someone where later on in the episode, Herschel talks about, like, Caleb can't do such and such, and so I'll have to do it. And someone on Twitter was just like, okay, I've been watching the show from day fucking one. Who the fuck is Caleb? Twitter has been fun, these episodes I've been live tweeting.
I'm glad you've been enjoying it.
Yeah.
So, we've got the fallout, which is mainly Tyrese going on goddamn warpath.
Yeah.
A completely justified warpath, but a warpath nonetheless.
Yes. Dude, that whole opening scene, like, I don't want to get too, just plot summary, but that opening scene where Tyrese freaks out and starts punching Rick, and then Rick starts punching him back and starts going to town on him. And, like, I think Carol's expression there, like, she puts her hands over her mouth and everything, I think, like, in that moment, we were all Carol.
I think so, dude. Rick lost it. That was some intense shit going down to start this episode off.
And it created a really great still that someone grabbed of him with just like this ravenous look on his face. I've seen it like in several different Tumblr GIFs since. But yeah, so that creates one of the main plot lines this episode. Like, I kept thinking, like, this is the closest we're going to get to a hard-boiled detective plot in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
With Rick trying to figure out who burnt the bodies. And Tyrese is just like... there was something about Tyrese's attitude that... Like, it was the sort of attitude I expect to find in a zombie apocalypse movie. I was trying to figure out if, like, place it, like, did a character on the show previously feel, like, as passionate about something like this as Tyrese? Just this idea that, like, specifically when Tyrese is, like, he says something like, I gotta focus on what's right or something like that.
Yeah, what is it? Rick's basically telling him what's going to happen, like, how he's going to handle it, and Tyrese is like, okay, you do that, I'm going to focus on doing what's right, or something like that.
Yeah. Which, understandably, he just lost the closest thing he had to someone to love besides his sister, so it's understandable that he would be really pissed off and passionate about it, but at the same time, I don't know.
No, I think he's absolutely justified.
Yeah. Yeah, so we got that. We've got, on Twitter, I called it the reunion of Team Badass.
Oh, yeah, I did see that.
Daryl and Michonne, going on the run to get the medicine for everyone else. And they had Tyrese and Bob Stuckey with them.
Yeah.
Which, people on Twitter, I don't know if we want to talk about this now or later, but people on Twitter, like, we talked about last episode how they were sort of pointing, in terms of the whole who's feeding the zombies plotline, we talked about how the TV show is obviously, it's sort of pointing us in the direction of Lizzie, but we weren't quite sure if that's the actual case. Like, the day after we recorded the episode, I started seeing people on Tumblr like, is it possible it was, like, Stuckey or someone else from Woodbury who's, like, a mole for the governor inside the prison?
Oh, now that'd be interesting.
Because that seemed like a genuine possibility. I mean, we haven't seen that much... We haven't really seen too many clues toward that, but it doesn't... It's not so far-fetched that it would come out completely out of nowhere.
Right, right. It's not, like, completely off the radar. That'd be a really interesting twist. And, yeah, I don't know how to handle Bob right now.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is because he's new, and we're assuming that he's going to be, you know, an important character and all that, but his character is not really popping for me. You know what I mean?
And that's part of the reason that I'm starting to think they might be onto something with the whole he's a mole for the governor or something, because he's just sort of there right now and doesn't have any really, like, compelling character story beyond, oh, he was an alcoholic, and he chose not to take that wine or beer or whatever, vodka, I can't remember what it was, off the shelf in the first episode.
It looks like it was wine, I think. I think the section he was in was wine and beer, so I think it was wine, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I thought it was pretty cool when he was, he's getting out of the car, and he's, like, standing by the car, popping off zombies, trying to get Tyrese to actually get out and follow them.
Yeah.
Like, that was a decent scene, but other than that, like I said, like, he's just not really popping for me, and I don't know why. Like, the actor seems good. Like,
yeah.
He's doing well. I don't know what it is. I don't have a solid handle on the character yet, you know?
Well, again, he hasn't really gotten any big storylines yet.
Yeah, this is true, yeah.
At the moment, he's sort of making me think of T-Dog from seasons 1 and 2, where he's just sort of like, oh, okay, he's another character to sort of fill in the background. Not sure what we're going to do with him, but yeah, oh, I did want to mention, this episode was written by Robert Kirkman.
Oh, yeah, you said that on Twitter.
Yes, Robert Kirkman. In case there's anyone listening to this who is not up to speed, Robert Kirkman created the Walking Dead comic, and he's been sort of in an advising role with the writing staff since season 2, I want to say. I can't remember if he's written any other episodes besides this one, but I thought that was cool.
Okay. Kirkman himself has, I'm not sure. It was a hell of an episode too.
Yeah.
I mean, especially considering I find his writing in the comic a little uneven.
Mm-hmm.
This was a really tight episode though.
Yeah. The one moment where, like, the dialogue just felt a little comic booky, which I don't even know if comic booky is the right word. It might just be, like, pitfalls that all writers fall into sometimes. When Carl sees Herschel leaving the prison to go get those plants or whatever to make the tea, they have their whole conversation, and there are a few times in that, there's at least one time in that conversation where, like, they say each other's names in the dialogue, which doesn't always sound natural. It sounds sort of writerly, like, well, Carl, you can't do this as such and such. Like, when you're talking to a person normally, like, you don't usually say their name because you're talking to them. But,
right.
And, like, I remember specifically one exchange where it was, like, Carl said something, like, Herschel was like, Carl, Herschel, I'm going to do this.
Well, according to IMDb, he's got 5 writing credits on the show.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't.
Well, he's always credited as the creator of the graphic novels, but he's actually written 5 episodes.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think this was his first episode writing for the show.
Right. It'd be a little weird if it was, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, written the comic forever.
Mm-hmm. And this late in the game.
Yeah. Adam and Herschel were really interesting.
Yeah. That was one of the cool things about this episode. We got to see so many different character dynamics that we haven't really seen a lot of. We got Carl and Herschel. We got Maggie and Beth, which they're sisters, so you'd think we see more of them, but we've gotten more Maggie and Glenn stuff in the past couple seasons than Maggie and Beth.
Dude, Herschel's storyline in this episode basically just killed it. Like,
oh yeah,
Herschel set up an encampment in my heart this episode.
Yes. And like when he gets coughed and at the end of the episode, it's
you
like
knew it was gonna happen.
You know it was gonna happen.
To be happy.
You know it's gonna happen, but like it's though he just takes it like a pro. It's
yeah.
Like this is I knew this coming in.
That last scene he has with Glenn is really good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, man. Glenn and Sasha.
That sort of repeated, like, everybody's got a job to do.
Yeah. Poor friggin' Beth. Like, she keeps saying that we're not allowed to be upset. And I'm like, are you not allowed to be upset? Because I think in this case you might be allowed to be upset.
Yeah. I think we can actually, we can probably take our analysis of Beth's whole reaction to this thing a little deeper than we did in the first episode, where I know we were like, you know, okay, we don't know how to feel about this because we haven't seen so much, and I think now it's pretty clear that this isn't a healthy way to be reacting, that she's clearly, I think instead of, you know, actually dealing with these things that are happening emotionally, I think she's just sort of shutting them off.
Mm-hmm. Which I can understand her not wanting to get too attached or involved in the events and stuff, but yeah, like, she's locked herself in a room with the baby, and she's not even able to interact with her sister beyond their conversations through the door, and it's like, she's, oh man.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
Oh man. This show. It's good to know that, like, at least for the time being, Judith is okay.
Yeah, no, that's true.
People were saying, someone on Twitter was saying, like, I want to see Judith get infected or turn into a zombie. I'm like, really? Really, guys?
Why would you want to see that?
I know, it's... Oh, man.
Well, see, what we want to do is we want to present the show as bleak, and then we want to undercut it with even more crushing bleakness.
Oh, man. Dude, I'm...
I know we're not playing out the whole infant immortality trope because we've already seen Sophia turn, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know if I can take that. Yeah. That might be a bit much.
Well, and as I understand it, the baby didn't survive the pregnancy in the comic, correct?
I don't even remember. Like, it's been years since I read the comic.
Yeah, the spoilers, possibly. I don't know if I'm remembering this correctly, but for some reason I remember someone saying, like, hearing somewhere that in the comic, Lori... like, is pregnant, but she gets shot or something, and the baby dies too, and so they don't have the whole Judas storyline.
Right.
And so they don't really explore the whole, like, okay, a baby growing up in the zombie apocalypse. So that's one of the reasons I don't think they're about to kill the child off. The second reason being, like, this is a baby on a TV show. Please don't kill the baby off. At least, if it happens, do it off screen or something. Like, I could barely take Misha in Hannibal Rising. I don't know how I would be able to I don't know if I could deal with Judith.
If we have 3 weeks where we don't release a podcast episode, you know it's because they killed Judith off.
Yeah. Oh, man.
What is my life? I don't even know what to do.
Need to reevaluate a few things.
Yeah.
But okay, I'm really worried about Glenn.
Glenn, yeah, because now I'm wondering, because we did the whole Karen thing last episode, and it was like, oh, okay, so we have a new relationship, somebody dies, yada yada, we've done it, it's out of the way. So, like, I don't have to be worried about Glenn. And now that he's sick, I'm like, fuck, was that a rehearsal?
Like, yeah. And it's like I was singing before, like, he's one of the characters who's been around since season one, and in terms of realism, it would make sense for another one of those characters to die, but I don't want Glenn to die.
That's true. I mean, it could be Glenn. It could be when Tyrese gets back, he's going to cut Carol's goddamn head off. Like...
Well, and then there's Sasha, who we've only gotten to know so far, like... We haven't really known for very long, but still, like, that's Tyrese's sister. I don't know, like, if he loses her too, I think he's just gonna go on a war path. Or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not sure.
You're not sure?
Cause he's going on a war path now because he actively has somebody to blame. Like, there is somebody who's responsible for this. Carol is responsible for the spoiler. Mm-hmm. Carol is responsible for this. But, like, that's something there's something proactive he can do there. I think if he loses his sister to the plague, I don't know if he would go on a war path, because, you know, what do? Mm-hmm. You fight a virus? That's what they're trying to do, literally. But, like, there's no one there to blame. It's just something that happened. Unless, you know, somebody actively is making them come down with the sickness. In which case, then, yeah, okay, I guess he would have a warpath to pursue.
Yeah.
But I'm not really sure. I think we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that whole scene at the end, like, I'm just going to jump around wherever I feel like it, because whatever.
Yep.
Where Rick asks Carol if she did it, and she says yes. On Tumblr, someone was wondering if possibly it was Lizzie who killed Karen and David. Carol burned the bodies, and Carol's just covering for Lizzie. Which, on the one hand, I'm like, okay, guys, can we really assign all the blame to this little girl, not just the feeding the zombies, but also the killing Karen and David. But on the other hand, there was the whole thing where she took the knife from Carol, and that was sort of like, okay, what's going on there?
Right. Yeah, that was a weird scene. But I think, yeah, kind of like what you were saying before, I think we need to see more of her motivation before I bought that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think, I mean, I've read a bunch of reviews of the episode, and I don't think anybody was doubting that Carol did it.
Yeah.
Which would make it a good twist if it was actually, you know, if we had stuff to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it would be an interesting twist. I don't know if I'd go as far as to say it was a good twist, because there would be no way that we could predict that that was actually what happened, aside from that weird scene with the knife, because we have no reason to believe that, you know, Lizzie would do something like that.
Yeah.
And they would have to, you know, make that up afterwards.
Oh, man, I just had a thought.
What's that?
What if, like, after the whole thing where Lizzie couldn't kill her father, like, Carol saw Karen and David in the quarantine area and was like, okay, here's an opportunity to teach the child.
Oh, that would be really fucked up.
That'd be really fucked up.
Now that I could kind of see happening.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
That's really unpleasant. That'd be really fucked up.
Oh, no. Because at that point, I don't know, like, up until this point, like, I've been sort of uncomfortable with the things Carol's been doing, but I can still sort of see the reasoning behind it.
Right.
And even with this, I can see the reasoning behind it, but I would not be okay with it.
Yeah, that'd be a very, very dark turn.
Yeah.
That's one of those approaching the moral event horizon sort of things.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you want to kill these people and burn their bodies, which, you know, that's just to destroy any pathogens or what have you.
Yeah.
And it's understandable. It's not, I don't think it's justified, but it is you can understand the motivation there. It's, you thought you were going to stop this contagion from spreading, which you didn't, but that's neither here nor there. You thought you were going to stop that from spreading. You thought that this is what you had to do to keep the group safe. Okay, I can understand that motivation, even if I don't agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's taking it to a whole other level.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to sit for a while to try and wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be fucking dark. No, I got it. Judith did it.
Oh, okay.
Judith.
It's like that episode of...
It's got that freakish baby strength. I read about that.
It's that episode of The Simpsons, Who Killed Mr. Burns.
Oh, yeah, because it was Maggie.
But yeah, there was also that scene of Carol, like, Lizzie is sick now, and so Carol had to put her in quarantine.
Yeah, so I guess we'll have to watch if anybody's still feeding the zombies, because that would take care of our Lizzie assumption.
Yeah. All these people that are sick, I'm just like, fuck it, all of them might die. Friggin' Dr. S. I'm like, oh, he seems like a cool dude. No, he's sick now. Oh, man.
Yeah, I am really worried for all of the characters that are sick. I mean, you want to talk about being on the freaking chopping block.
Oh, man.
But what do you think about the radio message?
I have a little bit of meta knowledge because, like, I'm thinking that I might have to stop following the Walking Dead Tumblrs that I'm following on Tumblr just because, they have, like, not necessarily spoilery stuff because it's not, like, actual plot details from future episodes, but it is, like, oh, this person was cast as this person.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, specifically, I read something about one guy being on set and, like, they were trying to keep it under wraps because, like, people who knew the comic would know who he was. But I don't know anything about the character from the comic since I've never read the comic, so it's not really a spoiler for me, but it's, I'm pretty sure it's a character from the comic.
Oh, okay.
And I know the character's name, but I don't want to, like, drop it in case it is a spoiler.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But I think we'll be finding out more about that soon. I hope.
It'd be nice. I mean, we have your newly christened Team Badass.
Yes.
I'm going to call them Team Badass Beyond.
Yeah.
So we have Team Badass Beyond, you know, out in the woods trying to make their way to that veterinary hospital.
Yeah. I just keep thinking, like, okay, say they make it, say they get the medicine and everything. How the fuck are they getting back to the prison? Because I think they said it's like 50 miles away.
Oh, yeah, that'd take forever.
I mean, maybe the herd, the mega herd, as they were calling it on Talking Dead, will have passed through. Oh, and I got to talk about Talking Dead. but maybe that mega herd will have passed through by the time they finish up at the university veterinary hospital or whatever, and they can, like, push the car off of the pile of zombies that they got stuck on, but...
That was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. They showed how they did that on Talking Dead, too, and that was pretty cool.
What were you going to say about the Talking Dead?
Okay. So, on Talking Dead... This past Sunday, Twitter sort of, I think, burst into flames, kind of, because they had Gail Ann Hurd, one of the writers or producers or something, Jack Osborne, Ozzy Osborne's son, who is just an awesome guy all around, and Marilyn Manson. And, like, going into the episode, I was like, oh, cool, this is an interesting group of people to have on the show. I don't know if Marilyn Manson was drunk or high or what, but he was having trouble making sense. And, like, to the point where, like, early on, like, I could tell, like, Chris Hardwick was trying to bear with it, like, okay, just give him a chance to speak, maybe he'll get to a point. No, he's not getting to a point, okay, we'll try and salvage something. And so he would just be, like, making really little comments about, like, okay, so Jack, what do you think about this? And then he started making overt comments that at first were, like, stuff that only the audience at home could pick up, and then stuff that was actually addressing, okay, Manson, you're not making sense here. To the point where, like, part of me is like, okay, Chris, you're usually, like, on the Nerdist and stuff, you're usually really good about not being mean and stuff. You're kind of being mean now, but on the other hand, if Marilyn Manson was drunk or high or something to the point where he was that inarticulate and it wasn't just, like, stage fright or something, that dude's got to get his shit together, at least for a live television show.
Something tells me from seeing some of his live performances that it wasn't stage fright.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, I've read interviews with him, and I haven't seen interviews with him, but he's a pretty smart guy, and he usually seems to be pretty articulate.
Yeah, he is fairly articulate when he's sober, I suppose.
Yeah. On this episode of The Talking Dead, I was just like, what? What is going on? And, like I tweeted my favorite thing that Chris Hardwick said, like, in the middle of Marilyn Manson saying something, like, and just going about, like, yeah, and, like, Rick and Carl... their whole dynamic juxtaposed with this, like, making really obscure references and stuff. Chris is, like, nodding, trying to keep up with it. And, like, just sort of under his breath, again, like, I don't know if anyone who was actually on the show would have been able to hear what he said. He says, someone online is writing an algorithm right now to follow his train of thought.
Yeah.
I died.
I did see that tweet. That was pretty funny.
That was ridiculous. And then, like, he kept, like, just, like I said, Chris Hardwick has said on the podcast, like, he usually tries not to be mean or anything like that, but when he gets that little bit of edge into his humor, he's just, like, I was torn because half of me is like, okay, you know, kind of mean. Other half of me is like, dude, that was freaking hilarious. And again, I have nothing against Marilyn Manson or anything. It's just he was not very good at the whole making sense thing on this episode of Talking Dead. So
it's a very fair critique.
But yeah, this episode, Isolation.
I mean, we are sort of seeing everybody start to get split now.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's getting put up into their own little spaces to continue their storylines. Because when we started, you know, it was the prison, and everybody's at the prison, and, oh, even Michonne's going to be here. And now it's like, okay, so we have Team Badass Beyond out doing their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have the people who are in quarantine because they've been exposed and they're sick. We have the people who are in quarantine because we know they haven't been exposed, and it's like children. And then we have the rest of the population of the prison. So that's, you know, four pretty distinct, disparate groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just had a thought. Crap.
And it's a little upsetting because then that kind of gets rid of some of the possibility of throwing those random characters together and seeing what happens because they're all very isolated from each other. But I suppose we'll see.
Isolation.
Oh, he said it. He said the thing.
He said. I'm looking at, like, the episode names this season, and, like, the first episode had the most creative name so far. We've got Infected, Isolation, Indifference, Internment. I think whoever was titling these episodes was just like, you know what, let's use all the I words we can use, and, okay.
And then get to live bait.
Yeah. But, oh crap, what was I gonna say?
Live bait, dead weight. Yes, we've reached the rhyming portion of this list.
Oh man. So we've got people in quarantine, people not in quarantine, Team Badass Beyond. Crap, there was something I was gonna say. I can't remember. Tyrese. People were saying on Twitter that, oh, now I remember what I was going to say. Okay, first, Tyrese, his whole, like, taking a hammer to all the zombies, apparently that is, like, actually a scene recreated from the comic, which a lot of people got excited about.
It's pretty cool.
And, like, the moment it started, like, he was getting swarmed, but I'm like, he's not dying. He's totally going to, like, Boromir the hell out of this, although not die. He's just
You can't say somebody's not dying and then reference Sean Bean. It doesn't work that way.
Worf, I guess, would probably be a better comparison.
Now, but Worf was always getting his ass kicked.
Yeah.
I mean, he wasn't dying, but he was always getting his ass kicked.
I'm trying to think of another character who went up against those sorts of odds and, like, survived. I think there was that dude in Mars Attacks. The guy who used to be a football player, and I haven't seen that movie in a while. I don't know where I pulled that from. But the other thing I was going to say, we were talking about how, like, there's people, like, going to get the medicine, there's people at the prison, and, like, we've talked a little bit about how, like, it's looking like they're probably going to be out of the prison at some point. I'm thinking, and mid-season finale, they're going to be leaving the prison.
I can see that happening. I don't think I'm going to be happy about it, but I can see it happening.
Yeah, I'm not going to be happy about it either. It's just
that, as we've discussed, we're not allowed to be happy. It's fine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the only person I can see, you mentioned like going up against those odds. The only person I kept thinking of was the Bride versus the Crazy 88. Like, she didn't really have too rough of a time with that,
I'm thinking specifically of, like, a character who gets swarmed by zombies, to the point where, like, they cut away from the scene and you don't know what happened to them, and then later on you see them, like, fighting their way out and stuff. Like, we sort of
Are you thinking River Tam and Serenity?
That's possibly. Like, that's one of those sorts of scenes. Although River, like, that is one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
Every scene in that movie is my favorite scene in that movie.
We sort of got something like that with Andrea at the end of season two. Like, there's a huge herd at the farm, and then she gets separated from the group, and then later on we see her just stumbling through the woods, running away from the last couple walkers.
Yeah, I think it was, it might have been on the IO9 recap, where I was reading, they were like, okay, so you found out the surefire way to survive a zombie attack in The Walking Dead, get totally overtaken and have your friends abandon you.
Yeah.
So you can, and make sure that you have the opportunity to show up dramatically in the next scene.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to survive.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tyrese fueled with that grief rage, going hammer smash face on some guys. Yeah. That was intense.
Yeah. Well, and they talked about on The Talking Dead, I believe, how up until this point, Tyrese has sort of been pacifistic. Which, I guess, I never really registered, but looking back on it, I guess that is sort of how his character was.
I don't know about pacifistic. Well, yeah. I suppose I can see that.
Yeah. I mean, specifically, there's a moment where, like, the governor and the other people at Woodbury are going to fight the people at the prison, and he's like, we're gonna stick around here and defend, but that just, to me, seems like logic, not necessarily pacifism.
Yeah. Well, I guess the only thing is, he's not bloodthirsty.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Carl, I really like this season. I feel like we're seeing a lot of maturity from him.
Yeah, he's definitely growing.
And, like, that whole conversation with Herschel where they're arguing over whether he's going to go with Herschel, at no point did it feel like he was being a petulant kid. It felt like, okay, Herschel's got a point, but Carl does have a point. Like, no one should be leaving the prison alone.
You know, it was a pretty logical, like, way to take responsibility. It wasn't, you know, oh, well, I'm important and I can do stuff, too. It was pretty much like, yeah, that's Herschel, like, you're going out there without the damn gun, man. Kid's got a point.
Yeah. And at the end, he's like, well, you can go out there, but I'm going to have to tell my dad.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just glancing at the Wikipedia article right now. And, like, there's, like, as Herschel mentions that there is an animal hospital facility nearby that could help, Glenn starts to show symptoms of the flu. Like, that was almost like dramatic gopher or dramatic prairie dog, the way that it, like, sort of, it got that very, I don't want to say cliche, let's say, like, traditional, oh, shit's going on with this character. They're coming down with a sickness of some sort with, like, the zoom in and, like, the sound gets all weird. I was like, oh, fuck. Not Glenn. No!
Bum, bum, bum!
If I can find that sound clip, I'll splice that in.
Sadly, it was Glenn.
Yeah. Oh, one thing I did like about this episode, and it might be because Robert Kirkman was writing, we got little bits of humor. In the midst of all this bleakness, we got, like, obviously it's dark humor, but it was still humor, which I'll take what I can get.
Yeah.
Like, when, Michonne offers to go with Daryl to get the medicine, they're like, he's been exposed, you haven't, and what she says, she's like, he's already given me fleas.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Like, I'm really loving Michonne this season. Oh, man. Although, I've mentioned this on Twitter and on Tumblr. Like, when she smiles, she is almost unrecognizable as the character. I think that's just goes to show how long she spent scowling all the time. There's so, like, all the feels. We're just going to feel all the feels by the end of this half season, I think.
I think I'm going to start a running tally of massive hordes of zombies that were conveniently off screen.
Oh, yeah. Because we've had several of those so far.
Really? Come on. You guys drove 15 minutes, and there's the largest horde of zombies we have ever seen on the entire show.
Yeah. Like I said, they were calling it a mega herd on Talking Dead. We did find out that they've been signed on for season 5. They've been renewed.
Really?
They've been renewed for season 5.
That's cool.
Yeah,
apparently. Renewal.
Well, apparently, like, they had record-breaking ratings on, like, the premiere, so.
I did read that, actually, yeah.
So they're like, yeah, we're this seems like a safe bet. And these first few episodes, they've been, like, I still want to rewatch this episode, but I think this has definitely been the strongest episode so far of the season. I mean, we're only 3 episodes in, but, whenever a movie or a TV show or something starts doing something like they did here with, like, the repeating the whole, we all have a job, there's such a risk of it becoming really heavy-handed or cheesy.
Right.
And I did kind of get a little bit of that this episode, but ultimately I thought it worked really well. Like, the moment I loved it was when, in that whole conversation Herschel has with Glenn, when he says, everyone has a job, your job is to stay alive, your job is to fight this. And I'm like...
Or it's, he's talking to him about, like, believing that he can beat it.
Oh, yeah, your job is to believe that you can beat it.
Yeah, it's like that.
Yeah, I just really love that. And, like, there's so many times in this series where people have said things like that, and it's like, well, yeah, you can say that, but this is the zombie apocalypse. It's not going to help. Nothing's going to work out. But, like, just Herschel this episode made me believe him. I'm like, yes, this could work. Glenn could stay alive. Please. I can believe.
I think you buy it because of the gesture he made earlier in the episode.
Yeah.
Where he goes into the, you know, quarantine cell block to make tea for these people. And he makes a huge point about, you know, it's the decent thing to do, and it's the only decision that you can make because it's the right thing. And, you know, I can help these people. I have the ability to do it, so I'm going to go do it.
Well, and thinking...
That's what I think really hammered home the point in the everybody has a job speech that came later.
Yeah. Well, and then just thinking to get the herb in the first place, like, dude... That's clutch. Oh, man.
Yeah, I think he was just getting elderberries.
Yeah. Yeah, he said the Wikipedia article says he decided to go into the woods to gather herbs in order to stabilize the sick. I don't know if elderberry is considered an herb, but.
Well, I think that's, I don't know what I was reading, but I remember somebody saying that it was supposed to be like elderberry tea.
Yeah, well, he says that it's elderberry in the episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But yeah, like, I didn't even think of, like, oh yeah, there are herbal remedies or, like, natural plant remedies to possibly hold this off. Like, I don't know if there's legit science behind this specifically, with this specific sickness, but I've taken it. Anything that might help people live. Any predictions for next week?
Man, I don't know. I'm not sure how things are going to move forward. I guess I hope we get some sort of implication of whether or not it was Lizzie feeding the zombies, and a little more on, you know, the whole Carol killing 2 people and burning their bodies. Yeah, that seems like it needs to move forward.
Yeah.
I don't know if I really have any predictions. I just want to see these storylines, you know, move forward. Because now that things have finally started, like, picking up, because we had a couple episodes where we're just setting things up. Now it feels like, you know, everything's happening.
Yeah.
Stuff's moving forward. I just really want them to take this momentum and run with it, you know?
Yeah.
Because we have got a lot of good, I think, you know, just on a very basic plot level, on, you know, this leads to this leads to this, that, that sort of thing. I'm not talking about character development or anything like that, because, you know, they've had a pretty deft hand with that sort of thing this season so far. Mm-hmm. But I think the plot motion now is really getting its wheels turning, and I'd like to see them keep that momentum going.
Yeah. And I'm definitely going to rewatch this episode, because I really want to see the scene where Carol sort of, like, breaks down after that whole conversation with Tyrese, because that, even though I haven't seen the scene itself yet, I've saw, like, a GIF set, and it's like, that's the most emotion we've seen out of Carol in a while, I feel like.
Yeah. This is true. It was pretty intense in the actual show. Mm. It seemed like there was more water in the barrel than we were led to believe, though.
That was
like, cause she goes to fill up the bucket with water and nothing comes out, and then she pushes it over and it's like, oh,
there's
a crap ton of water in there. What the hell is going on?
More water stuff. That was one other thing that I wanted to bring up.
Yeah, water is becoming a real theme. So
yeah.
I think you were definitely dead on when you predicted it earlier that it's transmitted through the whole water.
Yeah. I'm wondering, like, again, I didn't see the scene, but I'm wondering if the implication there is, like, okay, she spilled over the tub, so maybe they won't have as much infected water, or maybe that's going to spread it more. She goes out to clean the water thing, too. In a scene where, like, they were really towing that line of, okay, Carol, get back, get back, get back.
Yeah, yeah.
This show, like, I really gotta hand it to the writers and the directors on this show, cause, like, they're able to still have that tension there. Like, they have a scene like that where it's just a really mundane thing that Carol's doing, and then something gets screwed up, and so she's suddenly in danger. And, I'm genuinely worried about her. I don't know if she's gonna survive.
Right.
On other shows, you usually get a good sense of, like, okay, well, this character is a series regular. They're not going to die in this scene. But, like, everyone is, as we've seen time and again, everyone is up for grabs in this show. It doesn't matter if they're in the middle of fighting a zombie horde defending someone, or if they're sick with Spanish flu or whatever this is. Or if they're just trying to do maintenance.
Yeah, people can go at any time. I'm always amazed by how quickly season 3 burned so many of the prisoners.
Yeah, that, like, I was, that genuinely, I loved season 3, but that genuinely pissed me off. When, like, we're getting that little bit of backstory about the dude with the red hair, and he's like, oh, no, he gets shot, he's done.
Yeah.
And they also burned through the other dude when they made that attack on Woodbury. And, like, the rest of the prisoners. Like, the other ones I wasn't too broken up about because they all seemed kind of like dicks. But those last two that they had, I was like, oh, these could be some cool characters. And then it's like, no, we're not going to keep those around.
Nope, done.
We're taking your new toys away. This is why we can't have nice things.
Walking Dead is taking its ball and going home.
Yeah. All right.
Do you want to talk about movie suggestions?
Yeah, sure.
Some horror movie suggestions for our followers for this spooky Halloween season.
Yes. You go first, because I need to come up with some.
Like I've said before, I don't know our demographic. I'm not entirely sure what the people who follow us have watched before. if you're just getting into horror movies, like, I know most of our listeners came from the Hannibal fandom, and if, you know, you've come from Hannibal, and that's really your first exposure to horror, you know, you haven't gotten into the real, you know, what they consider, like, the classics of the horror genre and that sort of thing. Well, Silence of the Lambs is a classic. It's a freaking masterpiece, but other, you know, considered classics of the horror genre, I think a good place to start would really be the Scream series.
Oh.
Like, they're all on Netflix, too. But, God, I went back and I rewatched them the other day, because it's, you know, Halloween, and I was like, I remember liking these movies, and yeah, they are really, really good. Like, first one's good, second one's good, third one's solid, fourth one's good, so.
Cool.
Like, yeah, that's a better track record than a lot of slasher flicks.
Yeah, I actually haven't seen any of the Scream movies, and I've really been wanting to.
I would really recommend it. They are quite good.
Mm.
Very self-referential, very smart.
Yeah. I'm looking at my IMDb right now to see what I've given ratings for. I've rated 62 different movies. I mean, there are obvious ones like Cabin in the Woods.
Cabin in the Woods is great.
Yeah.
I think films like that also make really good Halloween movies, because if you have people over, or, you know, you're doing something, it is good to do a movie that's not, you know, relentlessly dark.
Yeah.
Like, Cabin in the Woods is dark, but it's also really funny. And I think that's another strength of Scream, is that they're, you know, they do have dark moments, but they're hard. They are horror comedies, I would say. They're really funny.
Yeah. If you do want something that's relentlessly dark, though, back in 2006, a movie called Bug came out with Ashley Judd.
Oh, Bug is a classic. Bug is really good.
Have you seen Bug?
Yes.
Dude. That, for those who don't know, it's actually based on a play, which when I found that out, I was like, dude, that's awesome that they did something like this on stage. Basically, it's the story of Ashley Judd's character, a woman who has sort of just come out of, like, a really abusive relationship, and so she's trying to sort of put her life back together, and this guy, she meets this guy that seems like an okay guy, and, like, he defends her against her ex and stuff, and he seems, okay, he seems like a stand-up guy. And then shit just goes cray. Like, it's the definition, I think, of psychological horror. Because, like, there are a couple moments of, like, gore, but it's all in service of just this incredibly psychological story going on that's very much rooted in these characters. And, like, I did not expect where this movie ended up. Like, I didn't know what I don't know what I expected going into the movie, but where it ended up, like, I was just, whoa.
It does take you for a ride.
And it is very disturbing. Like, just on an intrinsic level, it's a disturbing movie. So, if that's your, like, it's definitely worth watching. I thought it was very well done. It definitely sticks with you afterwards. If you're just looking for a fun horror movie, though, I would not watch this movie.
Oh, yeah, no, it is not fun.
Yeah. Like, it's sort of, it's in no way, like, the same, I don't think it's necessarily got the same vibe as this movie, but it's definitely the sort of thing like Black Swan, where it's like, okay, that was really well done. That may have been the most uncomfortable movie I've ever sat through.
Yeah, it's basically made to be unsettling.
Yeah.
I think Well, okay. Taking a look at, if you want to go with some of the other, like, pillars of the horror genre, mm-hmm. like, franchises that are considered classics, I think that can get kind of confusing, because there are so goddamn many of them.
Yeah.
So, to break it down, you've got, what, Friday the 13th. The first one's good, second one's solid, third one's good, fourth one's good, fifth one's okay, sixth one's good, seventh one sucks, eighth one sucks, the ninth one is an abomination, the tenth one's hilarious, Freddy vs. Jason's pretty solid, and the remake was good, but kind of by the numbers.
Mm.
Nightmare on Elm Street, first one's good, second one's a little confusing, but pretty good, third one's good, fourth one sucks, fifth one sucks, sixth one is terrible, seventh one's really good. Freddy vs. Jason, like I said, is solid, and the remake is also solid, also by the numbers, but unlike the Friday the 13th remake, it has the advantage of starring Jackie Earl Haley and Rooney Mara. So that's a plus. So that one wins automatically. And I just, that's another one I went and rewatched, and like it's by the numbers, but it's definitely watchable.
Yeah.
Hellraiser, first one's good, second one's good, third one's dog shit, fourth one is interesting, but it's kind of it, it doesn't really do much. Fifth one is good, but it's kind of pointless as to why it's a Hellraiser movie. It seems like they adapted another screenplay, and it makes no sense for Pinhead to be there, but whatever. It's, the story itself is solid. Same thing for the sixth one, like, they just don't make any sense as to why they're taking place in this universe. Seventh one's terrible, eighth one's terrible, ninth one's terrible. And Halloween, I'm not actually that familiar with.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the first one, and that's about it.
I the think very first one? The, like, old-school John Carpenter one.
Yeah, yeah, the one with Jamie Lee Curtis.
That's a masterpiece, like, hands down. Aside from that, I can't really... I don't really know about that one.
I've heard different things about the Rob Zombie ones. Like, some people say they're great, some people say they suck.
I don't think they suck. I think they're just okay. They're not, like, really, really mind-blowingly great. They're nowhere near as good as the original, but, yeah, they're okay. Man, what else? You've got a date on Halloween, and you want to impress your, you know, significant other, I would suggest The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, which is also on Netflix, and which is a masterpiece, one of the first films of the horror genre.
Yeah, I have...
Starring legend Conrad Veidt. I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just going to say, that's one that I've really been wanting to see, because it's referenced in Berlin Confidential.
Mm. It is tremendous.
Yeah. Since you're doing all the classic stuff, I'm looking at my movies I've rated on IMDb, and I'm seeing, like, not necessarily indie, but possibly possibly overlooked, or like sort of like not blockbuster horror movies, but really good horror movies all the same.
Right.
Stuff like Moon, which I think you can consider a horror movie. Kind of.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah, Moon is a fantastic movie with Sam Rockwell and Kevin Spacey. Moon being like, Sam Rockwell plays a character who's sort of like... I don't know if he's like a maintenance dude on the moon, or he's an astronaut on the moon doing some sort of research there, and he's at like the end of his cycle being on the moon, so he's going to be going back home and everything, and then crazy stuff starts to happen.
Yeah.
I never want to give away too many plot details, because it's like, what did I want? Quarantine was pretty good. I've heard that the original Wreck is better than the American remake.
I haven't actually seen either, but I've heard that Wreck is really good.
This isn't necessarily like all out, oh, really, really, really scary horror, but it's still an awesome movie that I would consider in the horror genre. The claymation adaptation of Coraline.
Oh, yeah.
Which is
there's some pretty frightening moments in that.
Dude, the book especially has some horrifying moments. I love Neil Gaiman's talked about it before. Kids read the book and just sort of see it as like, oh, it's like an adventure story about this girl, like, fighting evil and stuff. Adults read the book and, like, you see a lot. There's some stuff that just gets under your skin. Like, I just always think of the scene with the other father in the book after stuff starts to go downhill. That's a really creepy scene. The movie is great. Directed by Henry Selick, not Tim Burton, as many people think. Although that's sort of what the ads for the movie gave you the impression of. They were like, from the director of Nightmare Before Christmas. Well, Tim Burton didn't direct Nightmare Before Christmas. He created the characters in the story, but Henry Selick directed it.
Didn't Henry Selick also do James and the Giant Peach?
Yes, I believe he did. Okay, here's a sort of indie horror movie that, like, for me, it was kind of hit or miss, but, like, ultimately, it's got some really creepy, really good horror in it. Session 9, which is cited as one of the influences for the Silent Hill series. Basically, it's takes place at an abandoned mental hospital, which right off the bat, there you go. Stuff's not going to go well.
I don't think I've seen this. Maybe let's check this out.
Yeah, Session 9, the short period of time I had Netflix, I was like, oh, that was referenced on the Wikipedia articles for Silent Hill. I should watch that. It's got a very, like, the box art or, like, poster art is a very iconic image of, like, a wheelchair in, like, being illuminated by light coming through a doorway in a dark hallway. And they actually recreated that in Silent Hill 3, the video game. The story itself is a guy and his cleaning crew are hired to clean this abandoned mental hospital of like asbestos and stuff because they want to turn it into a historical thing, like a museum or something like that. And shit goes down. That's basically every horror movie. Something normal is supposed to be happening, and then shit happens. the really cool thing about Session 9 is that interwoven with the main storyline, one of the cleaning crew members discovers these old tapes from a session with that one of the patients at the mental hospital had with a doctor. And those are interspersed sort of as like a parallel to what's going on in the hospital itself. And it's just really, really creepy by the end of it.
I'll have to check that out. I'll put that on my thank you. Something I watched over the weekend that was actually really awesome. Have you seen Room 237?
No, that's the documentary about The Shining, right?
Yeah, it's actually a documentary about interpretations of The Shining. Not necessarily about, like, the making of it or anything. It's a documentary where they give people, like, free rein to interpret it. I would highly suggest you check that out if you're a fan of The Shining.
Which is
the interpretations... Fantastic. Yeah, it is a fantastic movie. The interpretations are really interesting because it goes from, like, somebody... One of the people talking about it saying, like, oh, you know, this is a movie about the past coming back to impinge on the future and, like, all this. And it's like, okay, I get that. That's cool. You know, a lot of the points you make, you know, you talk about, like, all the Native American motifs and, you know, there's all sorts of different things. It's like, there are Holocaust motifs that run through it, and it's really interesting. And then you've got another guy who's like, The Shining is Stanley Kubrick's admission that he faked the moon landing. Like, okay. Let's pack that up. And he goes and he makes some interesting points. The one that I just cannot, he talks about how in the one scene Danny's wearing that really ugly Apollo 11 sweater. And you know Kubrick picked out that sweater for a reason, because everything in a Kubrick movie happens for a freaking reason. Mm-hmm. Like, they talk about, there's set stories about him on the set of The Shining arranging the baking soda cans in the background to make sure they're all facing the right way. Like, if the kid's wearing that sweater, he's wearing the sweater because Kubrick wanted him to wear the sweater for a very specific reason. Mm-hmm. I just have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
And he's the guy who's making this other interpretations of, like, that's the key, that's what tells you that this is all about the moon landing. And I'm like, I don't buy it. But now I want to know why he's wearing that ugly sweater.
Looking at more movies on my ratings list. If you're into sick and twisted musicals, you got Sweeney Todd, you got Repo the Genetic Opera, which Repo... I still enjoy the soundtrack. I wish that the movie had been a little bit longer so that they could let the story breathe a little bit, but several people I know really disliked that movie, and I completely understand why. First time I watched it, I was like, the fuck? But you got Anthony Stewart Head, Sarah Brightman, Alexa Vega, Paul Sorvino, Paris Hilton in a role that totally fits her. It's a fun movie, I still think.
Hmm.
I haven't watched it since, like, I've only watched it, like, twice, and I don't think I've watched it since then, but the soundtrack I really enjoy, and it's different, if nothing else. Something else I was going to...
The original Carrie is on Netflix. Watch, because apparently the new one, Blue, but the original is, again, a classic and available on Netflix. I'm trying to think what else.
All right, I am going to recommend the 2006 Silent Hill movie. It's got its flaws. It is not by no means the best horror movie ever, but it's the one of the only video game adaptations I've seen that actually tried to make it a film rather than just, like, a movie adaptation. Like, that's one of the big differences that people have pointed out between the first Silent Hill movie and the second one directed by Michael Bassett. Christoph Gans with Silent Hill, the 2006 movie, was trying to make a film. Michael Bassett made a movie. And people enjoy both movies for different reasons. I really did not like the second one. I still really enjoy the first one, even though I will totally acknowledge the plot holes and problems that the story has. And, like, okay, maybe they didn't need to turn Harry Mason into a woman, although I really love Rhoda Mitchell in this movie. I also love Laurie Holden, a Walking Dead alum. As we've mentioned before, possibly one of the only reasons I had such an affection for Andrea. Laurie Holden's fantastic in this. Sean Bean, while his character is pointless, is fantastic in this. Deborah Kara Unger plays a great Dahlia, even though she's very different from her character in the game. You've also got friggin' Alice Krieg, the Borg Queen, as Christabella, and she totally sells that part. And if nothing else, it really captures the visual aesthetic and atmosphere of video games, as well as the audio side of things, because it incorporates so much of Akira Yamaoka's soundtracks from the video games. So again, it's a flawed movie. I still really enjoy it. And it's part of the reason it struck me so much. It was my introduction to the series. I had never played any of the games, and I had just never seen anything like it before in terms of horror. People will probably comment, like, oh, well, it's actually drawing upon this. And I know, yeah, it's inspired, parts of it, the video games are inspired by, like, Jacob's Ladder and Session 9 and stuff. But just the whole concept of Silent Hill, I've always loved. And so I think I've gushed about it enough. I'll stop
there. Yeah. You said people enjoy both movies for different reasons. Do people actually like the second one?
there are people who enjoy the second one. Some people are like, oh yeah, it was a really fun, cool movie. And I'm like, I'm just not seeing it. It's part of the thing, like, one of the big things about the Silent Hill series for me is that you can get, people take so many vastly different things from it. Some people love just the scare factor. Some people love the psychological storytelling. Some people like the emotional stories of the early games. Some people just like the visual aesthetic and could care less about the storytelling. Some people actually like the clunky gameplay because it's different than other games.
Hmm.
And so anything that has been interpreted in so many different ways, like The Shining, for example, I think is going to speak to different people on different levels. And so it's always going to be really difficult to create an adaptation where it's like, okay, this is going to appeal to a wide audience or anything like that.
Right.
Plus,
right.
It's a horror movie. So that's already in the eyes of the businessmen that sort of like making it a niche movie. And then you've got a really novel concept. And I don't mean to say novel, like, oh, it's the most unique concept ever. It's just, I think it's a sort of novel concept, which makes it even a little bit more niche. That's sort of, I'm sort of drifting away from your question, so I'll reel myself back. The second movie is a little more action-based, and I think a lot of people enjoyed that. It's got the same team, it's got the same creative team from the first movie in terms of the cinematography, the set design, even some of the creature design. And so it has that continuity there, and visually it's still a pretty interesting movie, although I think the way that it's shot obviously isn't as filmic, like, to use that word again, as the first movie. It fails for me on just a story level overall. Whether, like, Michael J. Bassett, Christoph Gans directed the first movie, and Roger Avery wrote the script. Roger Avery of Pulp Fiction fame. Neither of them came back for the second movie. Roger Avery was going to write the script, and then he had this whole, he was in a car accident where he killed two people, and he was in jail for a while, and so there was just a lot of stuff going on there. So they got Michael J. Bassett, who has written and directed several movies, including Death Watch, which is on Netflix. I watched, and that's a pretty cool movie. It's got, Andy Serkis in it, who played Gollum. While that movie is sort of hit or miss for me, it definitely captured, like that, I watched that before the second Silent Hill movie came out, and I was like, okay, this has got a lot of those elements that could make a good Silent Hill movie, so that's part of the reason I was looking forward to it. And then, either because of budget, or rushed production time, or just like, bad life decisions, the second movie just didn't deliver on the story level. And to me, I've thought about this a lot, because you know me. It's because Michael J. Bassett just didn't seem to understand where the emotional story was in Silent Hill 3, the video game, which is what the second movie was based off of.
Mm.
It's got elements of it, but it just doesn't quite reach, it doesn't quite, he just didn't get it. Because for me, Silent Hill 3 is all about Heather and her relationship with her father. And while you get a little bit of that in the second Silent Hill movie, it's not the same story, and it's not ultimately, it's more focused on Heather and Sean being sort of just like, okay, he gives her motivation, but you don't really feel the emotional weight of that relationship the same way you do in Silent Hill 3, the video game.
Right.
And I could go on about this for hours.
Yeah.
I've made several long posts about it on Silent Hill Heaven, if you ever want to see those. Like, I'll write posts and I'm like, why am I spending this much time writing about this movie that I did not like?
Yeah, the only point I was making is that the second movie has a 6% on Rotten Tomatoes, which
yeah,
you gotta try for that kind of score.
Yeah. people on Silent Hill Heaven enjoy this movie, and if they enjoy it, more power to them.
Hey,
did not, and I don't understand completely why other people enjoy the movie, so that's my final word on it. I still recommend the first movie, just because I still really enjoy it. And I think it was closer to the spirit of the video games than the second movie was.
All right. Well, do we have any other recommendations, do you think?
I'm still a fan of The Sixth Sense and Signs. I still enjoy those movies. Sixth Sense is definitely a solid movie. I still, like, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember, like, The Ring, the American remake by Gore Verbinski, like, that was one of the first legit horror movies I saw, and that freaked the hell out of me, so. Don't know how I would feel about it seeing it now, but, right. Just thinking back to it, I think it did, it excelled in more areas than most horror movies, like general blockbuster horror movies do. I feel like they had a strong, like, what's her name? Rachel Watts? Or, not Rachel. Naomi Watts. Naomi Waits. Whatever her name is. I think she really held that movie together.
I mean, we're talking, we've been doing a podcast about zombies now, so Shaun of the Dead seems obvious.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think that might be it for recommendations we can give.
Last recommendation, if you just want to have a whole lot of fun, go into it wanting to have just like, okay, don't expect a really complex plot or deep story. Van Helsing, 2004. I know Cleo's with me on this.
Oh, Van Helsing.
I think that was the first movies in 15 minutes that Cleo did, and it's still friggin' hilarious. And the movie, like, I freaked about it when it came out because I was like, yeah, all the classic horror monsters, and there's a werewolf in it, yeah! The plot is so convoluted, but you can tell everyone on the movie is just having so much fun doing it, especially Hugh Jackman and Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, I paid for a ticket. I did. Yeah.
I saw it twice in theaters. I enjoyed it so much. Of course,
just like I paid for a ticket for every one of the Underworld movies.
Oh, yeah.
Kate Beckinsale and Leather is like my kryptonite.
Alright, we should probably start wrapping things up.
Probably, yeah. I think that might be a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, one last one. I saw the American remake of Dark Water in theaters and was not impressed. It was okay, but it just didn't really do much for me. The Japanese movie, Dark Water, the original movie, is actually really, really good. I really liked. So if you can deal with subtitles, I definitely recommend the original Japanese movie, Dark Water. I was just scrolling through the rest of my ratings and I saw that, so.
Oh, if you can deal with subtitles, Pan's Labyrinth, too.
Oh,
that's kind of spooky. It's fairy tale-y, but
yeah,
it's kind of spooky.
Yeah, like, it's got a very, the creature design has a very horror aesthetic, but it is more of a fantasy fairy tale type thing.
But it is Del Toro.
Yeah. But yeah, definitely recommend that movie. The Orphanage, that also was a really cool movie. Not directed by Guillermo del Toro, I don't think, but produced by him.
Right.
Oh, if you're into psychological thrillers and you're into foreign films, and you can deal with subtitles, since we're on that right now. Fermat's Room. Saw it, like, on, I don't know if it was, like, TCM or AMC. It was just on some random channel. Maybe it was on demand. But we watched it one day, and it's a pretty cool movie. Not a horror movie. Definitely just sort of like a thriller type thing, but it's a cool movie.
I don't know where to go from there.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm going to link to all of these movies we mentioned in the blog post, depending on how much time I have. But we'll possibly like do a post on Tumblr or something.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll figure it out.
I'm also thinking about posting, like, the music I've been listening to this month in the spirit of the season. Stuff like Repo and the soundtracks to Signs and The Village are two of my favorite soundtracks ever. Say what you will about The Village, the soundtrack is beautiful.
I have said what I will about The Village at great length, whether anybody wants me to or not.
the soundtrack for that's like the one M. Night Shyamalan movie soundtrack that's been nominated for an Oscar.
I think we've had this conversation.
Yeah. James Newton Howard. Awesome. I love him. So underrated. Whenever people talk about the Dark Knight score, they're like, oh yeah, I love Hans Zimmer. I'm like, James Newton Howard too. He was on there. He did stuff. He's really good. Don't overlook him. He also did the Hunger Games soundtrack. Anyway, we've probably gone on long enough.
I believe so. Yeah.
So there are our horror movie recommendations. Happy Halloween, everyone. Stay safe if you're going out trick-or-treating or going to parties and there's the risk of, I don't know, blades and apples. That's the old urban legend, right? Or not even urban legend, but that's happened before, hasn't it?
No, it hasn't. It's an urban legend. There's no reported case of that ever happening.
But yeah, hope you have a fun Halloween. Hope you didn't have to spend a lot on a costume. We'll be back next week for Indefinite, I think is the name of the episode. Indifference.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because Indefinite would be a weird name for an episode.
It's just undefined. They forgot to populate the title.
Yeah.
We hope you'll be back for that. If you want to contact us, you can email us at amatteroftastepodcast@gmail.com. Twitter us, AMOTpodcast. I've been live tweeting the episodes. I'm going to try and keep that going. I feel like I'm not as engaged in the episodes when I'm live tweeting, and so I'm not as good at speaking about stuff on our podcast episodes, but maybe that's just me being self-conscious. I feel like I am getting better at the live tweeting, so... this past week I also had a stomach ache, so that was part of the reason I was distracted. Anyway, you can also subscribe on iTunes, rate and review. Our blog is amatteroftastepodcast.blogspot.com, which is where I link to a bunch of different stuff that we talk about on the episode. So if you haven't been going to the blog, you're missing out. Not too much. We also have the Tumblr, amatteroftastepodcast.tumblr.com, where we've started reblogging Walking Dead stuff. So that ratio of Walking Dead to Hannibal stuff is starting to level out. Although, most of the stuff I see on Tumblr is like Norman Reedus saying stuff, and it's awesome, and I'm like, but I can't just, we can't turn into the Norman Reedus blog, there has to be other Walking Dead stuff on here. And you can also subscribe on Feedburner, feeds.feedburner.com/amatteroftastepodcast. And I believe that's everything. I probably forgot something, but whatever. Facebook. Facebook.com/amatteroftastepodcast. I think that's it. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Have a good night.
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't you like to see something strange? Come with us and you will see this our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween.
Pumpkin scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween, everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat, all the neighbors gonna die of fright. It's our town, everybody scream. This town of Halloween.
The one hiding under your bed, teeth ground sharp and eyes growing mad.
I am the one hiding under your stairs, fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair. This is Halloween, this is Halloween, 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 Halloween. In this town we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
I'm wondering how much of it comes from his character in the comic.
You know, I don't know. Like I said, it's been years.
Yeah. Do you have a plane flying over?
I think that's what that was.
Okay.
I don't, yeah, I'm not sure what that noise was.
It's a ghost. Halloween, ooh!
Yes. Spooky plane ghost!
Oh, man.
Anybody want to join my new indie folk band, Spooky Plane Ghost?
Yes!
Most of our fandom, that was really arrogant. Most of our listeners came from the Hannibal fandom, which is what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.